Hey everyone, it's a brand new episode here at Music Addict Podcast. Of course, with me, you're Tom McDonough, one of your hosts, and my co-host,
Mark Taylor.
I'm going to confuse him every time. Well, everyone knows that we bring on some interesting guests. This week, or I should say this episode, I always say week because I'm out of habit from radio shows for so many years. But this episode, our guest is Jesus from London. They are a duet, basically, now two in a band. I'm sure sometimes they have more, but the two main people are amazing. They can play multiple instruments. Very interesting people. I thought they were really cool to talk, you know, to interview.
Yeah, and she's a heck of a drummer.
Oh, yeah, self-taught mostly.
Yeah, I know it's becoming more popular to see female drummers, but it's still really cool when you see a female drummer that can really play.
I love female drummers because they have such energy. I mean, the first person I ever thought of when you think female drummer, obviously, is go to
the Go-Go's?
Nixon.
Ah, gotcha.
Marcy.
Yep, yep.
Yes, she used to play so hard that she'd make her fingers bleed.
Wow.
Yeah. To go out
that's
there,
dedication.
Yeah, that's dedication. You know, a lot of female bands, and then back then, obviously, it wasn't as much popular. I mean, obviously, back the same genre or time period, the Bangles were mostly singers, and right. You know, he had a couple of other bands. I can't even think what the other name of the other band was. But all of them were singers, obviously. Wilson Phillips singing, you know, most of every female band back in that era was more, they were more vocalists than they were players. So it was rare to see a female drummer, but it is today. It's much more common and they're much more, you see many more of them and very good, if not the best out there.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, like I say, I always think when you see female band, you always think of the Go-Go's. That, you know, in the '80s, that was kind of, you know, they were the girl band. I mean, because they all played.
They all played.
You know,
yes.
Like you said, the Bangles. Yep, the Bangles. They were more singers, but the Go-Go's. I mean, and they could play, man.
Yeah, so can they're still out there doing their thing.
Yeah, but it was also cool because, you know, being from, you know, overseas, they have just a cool spin on the way they do things, you know. And what do they call the street performers over there? There's a whole, I forget, there's a name for it. I can't think of what they call street performers.
Yes, I've heard it, but I don't, you're right. I can't get it off the top of my head. That is something I'll have to research and I will put that on social media.
Yeah, but you know, they were a fun interview and, you know, good backstory. And I think it was a really good interview. I think it's going to be a really good listen.
Yep. Obviously, we this month being a Halloween month, we're covering the Halloween here in Florida, the music festival.
Yeah, I wish I could get down there. I'm sure it's going to be great.
Yes, we have a couple of our team members that are there from Music Addict. They will be running around starting tomorrow. Matter of fact, there's some really cool events there. Cool bands. Wish I personally was going, but I will not be there. Unfortunately, time constraints, you know, we all have time constraints and work and other obligations. Always way of getting in the way of trying to go do fun things at times.
I got you.
But yeah, so we got that going on. Of course, we're going to have a Halloween edition for our newsletter. We always stay so busy with the many things we do across many of the different things. Matter of fact, 13 Society has a huge Halloween thing this month. So we have a lot going on. I know it took us a sec to get another episode out. We should have, three or four more coming, quite soon.
Right.
You know, staying busy. I have to say music wise, you know, there's so many cool things. Halsey has a new album dropping this week. I'm very impressed with that album. Going from decade to decade, she has definitely taken it to a different level and notched it up of what she's doing because she is going to sing. Each song is going to represent a decade.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice, nice. And, you know, and not to mention with political awareness, we also have the election coming. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
Matter of fact, we even have an article coming out that is this week. It's going to be, what if Harris and Trump tie in the Electoral College? What does that mean and how will that work out? Because we're in a very, in very big part of possibilities of being a 269 to 269 split in the Electoral College.
Well, now that's going to be a good read. I can't wait to read that one.
Yes. I bet you don't even know how the process goes with that actual, what happens if that actually happens. It's only
happened. You'd win that bet, Tom. I said you'd win that bet. You said it's only happened once in history?
Once in history. Only one other time. So it's definitely, that's a good read. Definitely something everybody who lives in, you know, in America or in the world should be interested in, because this will affect the world. This election will affect the world.
Absolutely.
We definitely, you know, we stay busy and try to get as much as we can and great content out to people. You know, it's a lot of hands in the cookie jars of our staff. So it's great to see that we have our staff, do the things they do. I know Mark, myself, want to give big thanks to our staffs for everything.
Absolutely.
On websites, because there's a lot that goes on. A lot of people, it takes a lot of people to make what we do.
Absolutely. You know, I wouldn't want to try to do it without them. So they are, it's a great team. And, you know, we've got a bunch of young cats that are dedicated and always come through when we need them to come through.
And I also want to, I know we were supposed to put a couple of different shows together this year. I don't think it will probably be early next year, but I do want to do one on AI music, because it is the elephant in the room that everyone needs to talk about.
So absolutely.
We'll get some experts on. Other than we've got some knowledge of that. Again, know thy enemy the best. And AI is all humans' enemy in some ways, because we have to take all our jobs.
Yeah, we have been slowly becoming the experts, haven't we?
Yes, we have been. So it we look forward to a lot of different things coming up. Again, happy Halloween to everyone. Looking forward to November with Thanksgiving, one of my favorite holidays of the year. I love
it. It is my favorite.
Yeah, it is mine because of the food. And then we move into the holiday season and holiday cheer. And that is one of the things I would like to throw into this before we do any of the other things, maybe a Christmas discussion of Christmas music.
Absolutely.
We can have a bunch of different guests come on if we want, but I think it'd be really cool to talk about Christmas tunes.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, there's some classic ones there, and the fun of that, because I know we all hear Christmas music and we hear it everywhere. It's everywhere at every store. But ultimately do we actually talk about it? I mean, there's, again, you and I grew up in an era where we watched Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer every year. Yep.
Every year, Rudolph and Frosty.
Yeah, you know, Peanuts Christmas, yep. Yeah, Frosty the Snowman, the one with the Heat Miser and Cold Miser.
Night Before Christmas. I forget the name of them. I can't. The Year Without a Christmas. It's one of those.
Year Without Christmas. And then we have the one with the mouse in the house with the clock tower, where he writes a letter to Santa, telling Santa he doesn't believe in him, and Santa decides not to go to that town. And then they have to do something with the clock tower, making the clock tower chime at a certain, you know, a Christmas tune.
Wow.
That
I'm
might
drawing
be
a blank on that
Christmas.
One.
Yeah, that yeah, one. I remember that one as a kid because of the mouse being so sour about Christmas. So that's the reason I remember it. So I'll have to get that name. I'm sure you've seen it.
Okay.
Yeah, my favorite is the Peanuts one.
Oh yeah, absolutely. What is that one? I'm drawing a blank again.
Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown Christmas.
Yeah, I think Charlie Brown Christmas Tree or Snoopy's Christmas Tree, something to that effect.
I don't know, but it's such a good one. That is one of my favorites.
Exactly. So, I mean, we got a lot of cool things, but I would like to have an episode on Christmas music, even if we don't have anybody else on but us talk about it. Because it is 'tis the season, maybe we'll do that for a Christmas special before Christmas.
Absolutely. It is. And there's so many great Christmas songs, so that'll be a lot of fun.
It'll be a lot of fun.
But I guess we should get through Halloween first.
Yeah, Halloween first, because again, I like Halloween. I remember that as a kid. My favorite thing, obviously, was getting candy for Halloween.
Yeah. The neighborhood that I live in and my sister, our kids go, and they would go Halloween trick-or-treating with a pillowcase. You know, they'd come home and they'd have a pillowcase.
Full. That's what I used to do. Yeah, take your pillowcase and do that. And sometimes they have two of them.
Yeah, man. So it is quite an event out here.
Yeah, of course that ends about eighth grade, and then they never go again. And then of course you go to those things at high school for those dances, and they were never the same. So I kind of missed that as a kid. And nowadays, unfortunately, I mean, it's good. I like the fact that they do this. They do trunk or treat for these kids. It's a much safer environment.
Trunk or treat?
Trunk or treat. That's what they do for all the kids now. So what
I don't know, trunk or treat
is
that sounds kind of creepy.
Everyone gets in cars. They go in a parking lot and they open their trunk, and then this trunk or treat. So the kids go
and I see.
So they do that here. They do that. My oldest daughter just did it, and they usually do it a couple weeks beforehand, before Halloween, because most of the time Halloween does not exist here on Halloween night. There is no trick or treating. It's trunk or treat, which is much safer for the kids because it is in a setting where it's public and in a setting where everybody who has the candy is vetted. So.
Wow. Okay. So, and you're not knocking on strangers' doors.
You're not knocking at strangers' doors. I get it. Today's day and age, it's a little bit different than it was when you and I were growing up, where your parents just let you go out of the house at like five and said, "There you go. Get down the street. Come back when the street lights on."
I've not heard of trunk or treat. That's actually kind of cool. That's a Florida thing.
No, it's Michigan. Really? Ohio. New York does it, I think. California, a lot of the states do it. It's becoming newer and newer. I'm assuming because Chicago probably still has a much more tight-knit community. It hasn't really reached it for there so far, but usually in the boondocks.
It could be because my kids don't go trick-or-treating anymore. So.
Well, it's true. Your kids don't trick-or-treating anymore. You don't have any middle schoolers. So I got grandkids.
Yeah, no little ones. Yeah,
yeah, that's the reason I know that. So, because they already did their trunk-or-treat.
Gotcha. No, I never remember hearing about, you know, "Hey dad, can I go trunk or treat?" I would have remembered.
<You know? laughs> The youngest one will go home today and go, "Dad, can I go trunk or treat?"
Yeah.
And you'll go, "What?"
Yeah, you're going to go knocking on someone's trunk? What is that?
Trunk or treat. Yeah. All right. Enough silliness. What?
Yeah, man.
All right. So yes, on a serious note, it was great to have Jesus. The two of them were amazing. I really loved the interview. They were a great interview. They have a great story, backstory to how they
absolutely
who they are and where the name came from. So I was very impressed with it. And I look forward to several other really great interviews coming. We're trying to bring in some more older artists from the 80s that many people know, as well as we're trying to still bring out new artists that are current in today's day and age, up and coming, and that are pretty well known, but up and coming. So we want to keep bringing those on. And everyone, remember, we're going to have another Reverb Nation campaign starting December 2nd. So if you want to be on this show as a guest, submit to Reverb Nation.
Virtual Reverb Nation. Can't wait to hear you.
Yep. All right. Other than that, I say on to our interview.
On to the interview. See you on the other side.
Hey, everyone. I'd like to welcome our next guest. Okay. Obviously, I mean, Jessica and Jamie. So J&J with, and then goes into Jesus or Hey Jesus or however anybody really wants to pronounce it. But I do like Zeus. I mean, obviously, Greek guy. But the interesting play on words with for Jesus and all. But I'd like to welcome you guys to the show.
Thank you for having us.
Cheers.
That's a long way around to say good afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah, so good afternoon. Of Jesus and Zeus. And
so we can refer to you as you know, you guys are, you know, mini gods.
Well, exactly. There's two of them, so pick your god.
Yeah. Male deity or female deity?
It's a lot to live up to, but we're trying.
Yeah, a lot of pressure.
Yes, exactly. So, of course, you know, you get lucky enough. It's amazing what social media does. You know, you meet the most interesting people across social media, and it's much easier, especially since we're spanned across an ocean from each other. It's amazing who you meet, who you don't meet. And I have to admit that during my journey amongst all these, you know, all this time on social media, I have met the most interesting and some of the lastingest friendships that I've had with people, you know, far away that I would have never had the pleasure of meeting if it wasn't for the invention of the internet or social media. So this has been very cool. It was, you know, Jessica, you've done an extremely good job with your Instagram. I love the image of the band. You got it. And you said there's an interesting backstory to this band. So I got to hear this story. How did this all happen?
Do you want me to tell it or do you want to tell it?
I can maybe say the first bit and then you can continue. Yeah. So Jamie was on an ITV One show, which is a big, do you have ITV in America or is that UK?
Just UK.
Yeah. Yes. So it's like a big television, what would you call it, a channel in the UK? So Jamie was on a program called Take Me Out, which is basically, it's 30 women are like standing with like a buzzer. And you come down a love lift in front of these women and they basically turn the light off so they're not interested in you or they keep on interested.
It was very embarrassing, by the way.
So
I bet.
On the show, I was watching it at home. Well, my dad was, and he saw Jamie like getting ready in the lift and he basically called me through and was like, come on, like, Jess, come and check this guy out. So, yeah, I watched it and I just thought he looked really cool. I just had this, like, instinct to message him. So we messaged for about, like, 3 months or something on Facebook back and forth. And then eventually I was like, I want to come and meet you. And obviously he didn't say no. He said yeah.
Absolutely.
So, good choice, yeah, Jamie. Good choice.
Exactly. So
at
yeah.
this point, you didn't know he was a musician.
Yeah, I did know that you were a musician from Facebook. When I found him, I saw that he was a musician.
Because this is obviously it was a dating show, but they show a little like show reel of all the kind of things you get up to and stuff. So mine was like doing yoga on rooftops and like, you know, playing my guitar out on the street and life modeling, all this kind of stuff. So to the commercial woman, it was very unappealing, but you know, fortunately, young Jessica here was like, yep, that's the man for me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but, you know, it's really funny because obviously, like, Jess's dad, who first saw me on the TV, he's a big Nirvana fan. So I think my kind of image and the jumper I was wearing, although the jumper I got described as a cross between Dennis the Menace and Freddy Krueger, which didn't go down too well when you're trying to impress 30 women to try and get a date. I thought more Kurt Cobain-esque, but what do I know?
Yeah.
But no, Jessica's dad thought, oh, he reminds me a little bit of Kurt Cobain, which, you know, if you can get the father on side, then you know, it's win-win. And then obviously you're massively into Nirvana and all that rock music and stuff. But yeah, it's like an incredible way to meet. So like obviously Jess pounced when she saw the follow-up show the next week, which because I got a date by the skin of my teeth.
Yeah,
got a date and they show the date on TV the following week. And it was incredibly awkward and it was just all this awkward silence. Anyway, it was just, date didn't go well at all. So that's when obviously Jess took to Facebook.
Yeah, took my chance.
Took your chance. So yes, I'm going to, you know, slide on in there.
Yeah.
Into the DMs. And because you're from Berwick-upon-Tweed, which is like on the border of England and Scotland. So basically we're from two complete opposite ends of
the country.
So I was in the very far southeast of London, really, in Kent, and you're in Berwick-upon-Tweed on the Scottish border, basically, and got yourself down on the train to meet me.
Three trains. Yeah.
And then the rest is history.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, how long ago was this?
This was about 9 years ago, I think.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it worked. You know?
Yeah, it was worth it, wasn't it? I
mean, yeah.
It's bizarre. They see me on the TV, think, yeah, I'll have that.
I'll have that one.
Like a kid in a sweetie shop.
So the dating show didn't work quite the way you planned, but the result are probably better than you hoped for.
Yeah, even better. I mean, to be honest, I still got on a date and I got a free holiday to Tenerife. They call it the Isle of Fernando's, which doesn't even exist. It's Tenerife and the Canary Islands. There we go. There's a little secret reveal. And but yeah, date was horrendous, but I think I, you know, won the jackpot when I got back.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think you did really well, especially with three trains she came down on.
I know some say I'm punching, but
absolutely.
That is unique, the way to meet. So that,
how long before you guys started doing music together?
Yeah.
Well, when we met, interestingly and amazingly, Jess wasn't even a musician.
Yeah, it wasn't.
I didn't play the drum. Not what, even in
her play is amazing. You're kidding me, right?
No, I didn't even play music at all when I met Jamie. Actually, he was kind of the one that inspired me to take up a musical instrument because I just loved the music so much. So I was like, I really want some part of this. And I just thought, I did dancing and stuff growing up, so I had kind of natural rhythm already, I guess. So we just bought like a cajon, you know, a box drum.
Mm-hmm.
First, I kind of just started playing that at first. And then I think we did like our first gig after like 2 weeks or something like ridiculous like that on the cajon. And then I just, yeah, bought a drum kit and then just self-taught that. And yeah, that was it really. That was about six, seven years ago, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it is a tough instrument to master. If anybody in a band knows the drummer is the most important person in the band because they lead everything and control everything, and you play, and us being two music people, very, you know, very long backgrounds in it, listening to the way you play, and obviously the videos I know can be, you know, contained, but ultimately you can see you have great mechanics in it. I'm kind of in shock that you have been able to do that in such a short period of time. That's phenomenal. So that means it was innate in you already originally, because it's just not, you really can't be taught something that great. It's interesting. So, Jamie pulled out a piece of you that, definitely, worthwhile to do.
Yeah.
One of the few, there's only a few people I can say, probably five people I've met on Instagram and drumming that, and I've met a bunch, but five that I would say that out of that I would actually play with. And you happen to be one of them because you're extremely good. I can't, deny that. And I'm sure Mark, you can't, I'm saying her play is phenomenal.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Yeah. I'm kind of stuck. I didn't expect to. I figured you've been playing for years and, you know, you guys got together. I never expected to hear that, he was a guitar player and encouraged me. So I said, I might as well go master this. That's pretty good.
So, Jamie, you really do have kind of the Jesus Jesus thing going on. I mean, you're able to do, you have the magical touch and turned her into a great rock duo you two do.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's incredible, to be honest. But I mean, didn't you say that when your mum was pregnant with you, your dad used to just like blare Nirvana out like really loudly.
So. Yeah, he did. And then he used to do like rhythmic things when I was a baby. Like, so I think that's like drilled into
moving
me.
Your limbs about.
Yeah, moving my limbs and stuff. So I think that's it. That's what's done it.
So Jamie, how long have you been doing music for?
16, 17 years. I mean, so basically my stepdad is a professional musician. He's been playing in Bjorn Again, which are pretty successful ABBA tribute bands. You know, for tribute bands, they've done pretty amazingly. Yeah, they've really played, Glastonbury, Royal Albert Hall, Wembley Stadium, like parties for Rowan Atkinson, aka Mr. Bean, loads of cool stuff. So I kind of, as a kid, Toby taught me the guitar, but I wasn't really interested. Unless I was Jimi Hendrix immediately, I just kind of wasn't interested. I didn't have the patience for it. So back then as a child, I kind of had a long period of having, you know, I was kind of a skinhead and was more interested in football or soccer, as you say. But when I didn't get to the level I wanted to. So I did want to be a professional football player. When that didn't work out, I just, grew my hair long, grew a beard as soon as I could, took the guitar more seriously. And then it was when I was about 16, I started writing, my first few songs. And I've probably name dropped Nirvana a lot already. So I'm like some crazy Nirvana enthusiast, but I did grow up listening to Nirvana and they were like, a big influence, on me, particularly Kurt Cobain and his amazing voice and his songwriting and everything. So that was kind of, what inspired me in the beginning. But yeah, I was kind of quite late in learning to sing and play guitar and songwrite compared to, a lot of the whiz kids these days who start really early with everything. But yeah, it's been many, many, many years of playing, now and starting out busking on the streets, playing music on the streets across the world in different places. But still love my sport. I'm a football and tennis and stuff as well. But, yeah.
Very cool.
Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, no, go ahead. You guys, I was going to take it in a different direction, but you go for it.
Well, no, I really, when you guys play together, first of all, there's a lot of sound for just the two of you. And, I really dig the vibe you guys have together. And I'm glad you mentioned Nirvana so much because I heard a lot of that kind of influence. And I was going to say, who were some of your influences? I know you mentioned Nirvana, but that whole period of music was kind of cool for what you guys do.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I love a lot of the 90s music in general, whether it's rock, whether it's the pop music from the 90s, I guess because they were still using, real drums on the records and everyone's playing the instruments. And it just felt like there was a lot of, I guess because I was born in 89. So I still feel like a kind of, 90s child almost, albeit I was very young. But I really loved that kind of time period with the kind of early 90s rock grunge stuff of, Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains. And then you had the Britpop scene come along. And I'm a big Oasis fan still as well. I know a lot of musicians don't necessarily like Oasis because they're kind of like quite simplistic songs. But I love Oasis. Just the 90s in general, I think kind of sort of oozes out of our music, quite effortlessly. But both of us listen to all kinds of stuff, don't we?
Yeah, mixture.
We have quite a similar taste in music. And I'd say the 90s is quite strong within that, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, as a drummer, who did you kind of draw from? Because if you didn't grow up going, I want to be a drummer, a lot of my friends that were drummers, their influence was Animal from the Muppets. If you didn't grow up, who were your drumming influences?
Yeah, it's a good question, actually, because when I first learned, I honestly didn't actually know that many drummers or anything about drumming at all. I literally just started listening to Jamie songs at first and playing along to them. But as time went on, then I started noticing like how incredible drummers are and like definitely Dave Grohl, 100%. Like I love his drumming style. It's so good. And like Chad Smith from Red Hot Chili Peppers, like he's amazing. And Sugarfoot, like Cindy Blackman, like I just love so many drummers now. But when I first started, I really didn't actually get much inspiration from anyone other than just you and really wanting to like learn an instrument. So yeah, it was a funny way of, it wasn't like I looked at someone and thought, I really want to be them. It was a sort of different way of doing things really.
Mm. That's so cool. Cause there aren't a lot of female drummers.
Yep.
So
yeah.
A lot of the times, you sing or background, but so to be as good as you are and not coming into it because you were inspired by someone to just pick it up and be that good is, seems to be inspirational. I've been showing your videos to some younger drummers, a couple of the female drummers that I know say, hey, take a look at this. She can really play. And I'm like, now I can tell them. And she didn't even start until 7-8 years ago. So that really is kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm sorry, Tom. I feel like I've been taking over the conversation. Please, I'm sorry.
It's all good. Normally it's me.
I, you know, right?
Normally, to me, that's a shitty bus.
Yeah.
So the thing with the band has got, you're right, it's got that unique sound. Personally, I love the 90s. Oasis, by the way, Jamie, beautiful band. They are, you're right, it's a very ecliptic, well, you know, kind of a niche like, but Oasis, in my opinion, was one of the better bands. If I had, but they're my top 10 in bands. You looking at the '90s was a very different time. You know, I played in the '90s, you know, there was a lot going on then, especially the female vocals was changing and making headlines. Lilith Fair made huge amounts of strides in that period of time. But the rock bands, you're right, the grunge scene came in. Look what it transformed, what we have in modern sound, you know, of the Pretty Reckless today. All these things, that they've been shaped by everything that the 90s started out in grunge, moved into the 2000s alternate rock. And, you know, kind of got more poppy, and now we got what we have today. But I still think the 90s is a solid thing. So there's great inspiration you guys pulled from that. You can hear it definitely in Jessica's play, that 90s play. Granted, she does pick a lot more on the rock end of the songs, but ultimately you can hear it and see it. I've been very impressed by what you guys have done. And I got to ask, what – taking what you've done and put yourself into social media, what drove you to want to do that end of it and drive in? Because many people struggle at social media and trying to get things done, getting organic reaches is tough. Instagram is not the easiest to do that. It is it's a tougher gig unless you're at it 24/7. It's a tougher gig. So what made you go into doing this and getting out there?
Yeah, to be honest, my Instagram was like sitting at around 16,000 followers, I think, for about 6 years. I wasn't really using it. And we did a tour like out in the Alps, for a few months over Christmas, and we came back and I sort of had, you know, a few weeks sort of, you know, not doing as much. So I just said to Jamie, like, I'm going to like take social media seriously now. So I was like, I'm going to post a video every single day and just see how it goes. With not like a huge amount of expectation, but I did have like 200,000 in my head. Like that was just the number I had from that followers that I really wanted to get. So I just stuck with it because I know that you've got to really stick with it if you want to do well, and just posted a video every single day. And luckily it just took off pretty quickly. You know, like followers were coming in like faster than I thought. So yeah, I've just been lucky and just sticking with it really.
Yes, it's a tough gig. You're right. Staying at the 15,000-16,000 is kind of common. It's right where people are at it, but it's tougher to get over that hump. I'm not posting all that much anymore. I used to post a lot. Now I'm not posting as much. You're right. You see that effect with it. And social media is hard to master, especially on top of it. You think about this as a band. You got to write. You got to play. You got to play well. You got to be your touring manager, oh, and social media manager, and your publicist, and all these other things. And it's tougher for bands and artists today to get out there and do the things they're supposed to, because you used to before ever you had a team around you. Nowadays, it's you guys are wear every hat. Just take one hat off and put another hat on. In England, I know it's a tough. London's music scene is a tougher gig as well. More in America, it's a little bit easier to get out there. I guess because it's much more wide spaces, and you can, in local music scenes are kind of big. I'm not sure how much outside of London do you guys have in music scenes that are big enough. You guys are doing pretty well for what you guys, you know, competing with that. And I'm sure you're getting some recognition here in the States. What are you guys envisioning to, what are you guys going to do? I mean, this rest of this year, you guys got tours, any tours going on this year?
So we're definitely going to be back in the Alps, aren't we, over the winter?
Yeah.
Which is a great gig. I mean, it's pretty full on, but you're kind of driving around the snowy, mountainous, bendy hairpin roads and gigging every night, and the crowds over there are like pretty crazy and are up for it. I mean, the dream for us is still to, you know, to be touring the world with our original music. It's you know, far easier said than done. And as you said, these days you kind of have to be doing everything yourself. You have to get all the numbers and everything. And if you're going to get help from a label or a manager or anyone, they need to see that it's all set up and ready and waiting to go. So it's easy for them to jump on and kind of just give you the push to the next level. So, I mean, as we said with Jess's drum page, it's going incredibly well. It's opening up new opportunities. So that's kind of like one possible door opening for then the band to get some other opportunities and things. So the goal is to, you know, is to tour the world with our own music. It's not easy to do that. Even tours are, you know, really expensive in themselves. So, but as you said, we just have to keep doing all that we can. Posting the content, we need to release more music again, just kind of taking a break from doing that and, you know, with doing your drum page and other various bits. So it's not easy. As you said, it's difficult. You think now everyone's got a phone, everyone's got a camera, everyone can record their own stuff at home, but you'd think it's easier than ever, but in a way it is. But then, you know, everyone is kind of almost competing with everyone. And, you know, anyone, as I said, can just upload a song. I can't remember what the stat is, the statistics for how many songs are uploaded to Spotify a day or something. I don't know if you guys know, but I know it's sort of a crazy number.
Yeah, it's 100,000 a month.
100,000
If I'm mistaken.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's a lot of music being... And I think there's even more. It may be even more. I can tell you this. The big labels are putting about 17,000 songs a month. So if you take that out of the 100,000, let's say we'll use that as an even number, that's still 80,000 songs coming from independent artists from all over. Competing with that is, you know, it's you become white noise in a lot of way because there's so much of it. Diversifying and trying to get yourself out there. And like you said, Jessica's got really done really well with, you know, the drumming and with on Instagram, you know, teaching that aspect, you know, to others will definitely pay off, in the end. It's just a matter of, you know, how can you make that gimmick, so to say. And like I said, you guys got a really cool tagline, you know, looks like Jesus, sounds like Cobain. That's a cool tagline. That describes you by looking right at you, Jamie. That pretty much just nails it. That was really well done. Giving the gimmick on that and then building on that. Like you said, you guys have been playing. It's, you know, getting out of Europe and coming to the States would probably be your next biggest move. With your guys' accents, remember us Americans love accents. We're crazy about them.
Honestly, America is massive on the list for us, maybe even number one. It's just, it's getting over there visa wise. I mean, cause just before Jess learned to play, the drums or the cajon, we were in LA for 3 months. So the plan was, this was, I can't remember, 8 years ago or something. And we're thinking of new ways of getting my music at the time discovered. So I just had this crazy idea. Let's go to LA. Let's do some open mic, see what happens. So we went to LA. I remember we went to an open mic and I got my guitar. I started playing. I was like, man, this sounds like crap. What's going on? I'd realized that from the aeroplane, all the electrics of my guitar got bust up. Anyway, so to buy a new guitar, and when I went to this music shop in, I can't remember which boulevard it was in LA, but met the mayor. I remember he was called the mayor. And I was like, let's buy a busking amp here and let's go busking, somewhere in LA. So started in Santa Monica, played there. No one was really listening. So I was like, right, let's go to Hollywood. That's where it's at. Let's go to Hollywood and play. So played on the boulevard there. Really loud, the traffic, people, the costume artists there, the rapper dudes flogging their CDs and stuff. Anyway, I remember busking there one day and it was really quiet. It wasn't making much money. And I remember Jess kind of thinking like, you know, is it time to move on now? I was like, just wait, let's just play a little bit longer. Like I'm having fun. Let's just see what happens. Anyway, these guys come out from the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. It's a very famous hotel in Los Angeles, and where Marilyn Monroe used to live for a bit, I believe.
Yep, it's very famous.
Yeah. So the workers, maybe one of the managers, came out and were like, oh, you sound dope, man. Like, play us like your best song sort of thing. I was like, okay, cool. I just played them like a song called Dakota by the Stereophonics. And they're like, wow, awesome. Loved it. They're like, meet us in the hotel in like half an hour. You can like audition in front of the senior, whoever. So like Jess and I are there. It's like, I'm wheeling my busking gear, my suitcase, my amp, my guitar, my CDs and stuff into the hotel. Get my busking amp out, play a few songs. They're like, wow, cool. Like, you basically scored some gigs over the winter to play at the Roosevelt Hotel, which was really cool. So the point is there was kind of like, I felt like maybe we didn't get to wide back then. Obviously you weren't playing, you weren't a musician back yeah. then, but we kind of felt it just even from now stuff online that we hear from Americans knowing how much they love music, the almost the little taste that we had there. It was like, you know, America for us, I think would be amazing. Like even that was just like a little doorway. Okay, ultimately it didn't lead to anything huge, but it was like, wow, it's so cool to be kind of on the streets, catapulted into the Roosevelt Hotel, which is like, you know, it's a famous hotel. I think even the first night I played there, they were like, oh, the Killers are staying here tonight or something. So it was like, yeah, I totally agree. I think American with their love for rock music and just the diversity of music in general, I think it would be amazing for us to try and come over again and play. It's just working out how, when, and I think we just need a team, don't we, to help us make that sort of happen.
Yeah, cool. Mark, before I keep going, go ahead.
Listen, I love it. And what do you call it? Busking? Here we're just street performers. So,
I guess, I don't know if it's, I think, so busking means, playing on the streets, but I think it comes, I don't know if it's a Spanish word originally, buscar, but it's, that's what we call it anyway. Like, we call it busking. Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, I think you said you've been busking long enough that you were thinking about maybe writing a book or doing something about your busking experience.
Yes. So, back in 2012, I embarked on like a 2-year busking trip around the world. I gave it a name because I felt like this was, you know, this was a big ordeal going on this trip. So I called it the Great Big Busk. So it was me and my ex-partner. She wasn't a musician either, and I obviously ultimately didn't convert her to one either. My previous, it was a 2-year trip, busking, hitchhiking, couch surfing around Europe, Australia, and New Zealand. Couch surfing, if anyone's unfamiliar with that term or word, that is kind of a legitimate thing that I think still exists as actual community and website called couchsurfing.org, where you create your profile and you basically, if you're a traveler, you can request a couch, as it were, to someone living in the city in which you're going to be traveling to. That's what you do. And it's totally free of charge. It was back then. I don't know if things have changed now, but if you were going to Paris or Amsterdam or something, you would try and find a host in this city. You'd drop them a little message, say, hello, I'm going to arrive in Amsterdam in a few days. Have you got a couch for me or something? So that's kind of how we got by accommodation wise and needed to obviously save the pennies because, you know, we were just getting by literally on the busking, funds and busking earnings. But it was a totally life changing trip. It wasn't just a travel musical adventure. It was a kind of spiritual experience, the whole thing. It's definitely changed me for the better, I think. But yeah, some incredible stories. Got very good at hitchhiking cars. Tried to hitchhike a boat once because I was getting a bit cocky about the whole thing. I thought, right, I've mastered, you know, hitchhiking cars. Let's have a go at boats. So I remember being in on the east coast of Spain on the Costa Blanca, and it's like there's a ferry port there which goes over to Ibiza, you know, one of the Balearic Islands, like party island of Ibiza, and there's also Mallorca. So I remember walking around the port there and just trying to ask, basically, trying to hitchhike a boat. Anyway, didn't work out, so I had to spend the night sleeping, my girlfriend and I at the time, sleep on a roundabout because we didn't have enough money for a hotel or anything like that. No couch surfing host and no boat hitchhiked Tried again the next morning at the port. All right, right. We're going to have to use up every last penny here to get the ferry across and then start from scratch again. But yeah, that's just one of the funny stories from the 2 year adventure. But yes, I've started writing a book on the Great Big Busk, which is a bit of a trip back in time.
That sounds like it's fun. Cool. I mean, interesting. That will be a heck of a story because people don't always get to experience that, but that sounds like a wild adventure of meeting lots of new people in different settings, and especially the boat.
Yeah.
Boat hitchhiking is quite interesting.
Yeah, I've got many a funny story from that. I shan't spoil them all or bore you all. Go on forever. But, yeah.
Give us one. Just one.
One more. Okay, so there was this one time my previous partner was called Molly. So we were in a place in France called La Rochelle, which I think is on the, it's like a coastal, town on the west coast of France. So we arrive, we've already tried to find a couch surfing host to no avail. No one's got back to us. Obviously not enough money to get a hotel or B&B or anything. So we turn up, and again, this is a holiday port, beach, seaside kind of town. Anyway, I see this kind of group of hippies, shall we say. And so I approach them, you know, in my mind thinking, one of these guys, maybe they know somewhere we can stay or they can help us out or something. Anyway, none of them spoke any English, and I don't speak any French. But anyway, one of them, fortunately, they understood my English. So they were trying to ask all their friends, oh, look, these two English people, they're traveling around the world, busking. Has anyone got anywhere for them to stay? Most were like, no, sorry. Then there was this one guy, the most French of all the French people, didn't speak a single word of English at all. Not that we should expect everyone else in the world to speak English. I know it's global language, but hey, didn't know a single word. Anyway, they had communicated that this very French guy could host us for the night. So basically, he's leading us down the road like the Pied Piper or something. We're kind of communicating with sort of hand gestures and sign language and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, we finally take sort of a 20-minute walk back with this guy. Mind you, we never met him before. Can't speak any English. We're like, you know, who is this guy? He might be thinking the same thing, but, you know, we felt maybe slightly more, you know, in danger than he was. So he leads us back to this tiny, tiny little apartment. He opens the door and his poor wife is there. And honestly, I've never seen a face like it. She looked furious at these two young hippies have like been turned up at the doorstep in this tiny like box apartment. So we were like thinking, oh, this place is absolutely minuscule. Like, where are we going to sleep? So they're kind of like discussing in French, like, and she's like all angry and stuff. And then eventually it gets decided, right, you guys are sleeping in the bathroom. We're like, oh man, we've got to sleep on the bathroom, like on the bathroom floor. Just like, well, you know, beggars can't be choosers and all of that. So anyway, spend the evening jamming a bit. The French guy plays harmonica and stuff. Anyway, it comes to bedtime. It's like, right, night. We're on the bathroom floor. Literally just head is by the toilet sort of thing. Like pretty gross stuff. Anyway, we go to sleep. We kind of deal with it. Then it gets to like 3, 4 in the morning. And we, it knocks on the door, the guy. He's like, oh, toilet. And he comes in and we're like, please just be going for a number one. You're just going for a normal quick toilet. Anyway, but the French diet, they like snails and all garlic bread, all this stuff. Let's just say the sound effects that I could hear coming through that bar.
No.
Very, very unpleasant. I'm not going to demonstrate what those sounds were, but we were just like trying to not be sick. And then he comes out. He's like, oh, sorry. And then we have to go back in and go to sleep. Oh, it was just honestly, the smell.
That would have been terrible.
Oh, my God.
It was like, man, we've got to get out of this place.
Oh.
But.
You got to write the book because I got to hear more stories. You got to write the book.
Yeah, you got to write that book. It's right.
I know. Crazy. Live to tell the tale anyway. Yeah. So.
Absolutely.
You survived it. But yeah, this is something most people don't experience. But a lot of people in music can relate to going from place to place and barely having enough to scrape by to do whatever. And sometimes you're sleeping in the strangest places ever. I remember sleeping in some of the worst motels ever. And it just is what it is. And yeah, that is something that would, I think that a lot of people would be interested in reading, because the experience itself, they said, I'm sure you have some great experiences. And of course you have experiences like that, that I certainly would glad it wasn't me.
I'm sure you're not.
So, if you guys had to pick one person you could play with today, anybody, who would it be?
Oh,
that's really hard.
That is really tricky, isn't it?
Tough question.
Let's just say you've broken your arm, so you can't play the drums. I probably would be maybe giving Dave Grohl a call. Just to give him, just to hear that thunderous drumming, that rhythmic drumming on one of the tracks. So you'd be out of a job just for a day. Just for a day.
It's a good person to be replaced by. He's an icon.
Yeah. I can't complain about that. That's fair enough. If I had to pick someone modern, like right now, I'd probably say Miley Cyrus. I love her voice.
That raspy voice of hers is amazing. She can rock. It's amazing how many people didn't realize the girl can, can sing rock. And she, I mean, going from that, the stuff everyone expected out of her Hannah Montana to the way she has transitioned, man, what a transition that girl's done.
Yeah, amazing. Her voice is so, so good.
Yeah, we could just get on stage with her, then we can both, but we can do it.
Yeah.
And then you're on drumming, and then there we go. Don't have to kick anyone off their instrument that way.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, I mean, you guys have had quite the adventure. I hope in the next couple of years, you guys make it here to America. I definitely would come see you guys play. Keep my ear out if there's anything comes up for you guys, if they're looking for anything. The next 5 years, I'm sure you guys are still young. You guys got a lot you can adventure for the next 5 years, and you never know, maybe we'll be saying we knew you guys before y'all became famous. You mentioned Alice in Chains. I saw them with the original singer or lead singer before they became famous. They played in a small little bar. It was in a bowling alley in Detroit. And they were, they actually bought us drinks. There was only four of us that were watching them. They bought us drinks. I remember sitting with them, and it was with the original lead singer, who they ended up replacing, obviously. And then they made it big the next year. And it was quite the interesting things when you meet people out of the blue that, before they're famous. It's amazing, how they are. And again, them buying us drinks was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's really cool. It was Lane Staley was the singer.
Correct, yes.
Wow, that's amazing. Wow, very rare.
Yeah. Some of the interesting things, music brings people together in unique ways. I am a big rock fan, always have been. I love all the going back to the classics and all. It's my more genre at home, even though I played pop a lot. And when I was playing music, still, I really rather rock, but I was stuck in a gig. I had to do pop, so it is what it is. So I definitely give it to you guys for continuing that, and just thank you guys for being on the show with us.
Yeah, and if I can just
great, Mark, go for it. Yes,
real quick, I really admire the way you guys are doing it, because it's old school. We were talking about how many songs are being uploaded to Spotify. It's almost two songs a second. I haven't done all the math, but it's almost two songs a second. So when you're doing it the way you're doing it for the love of the music. It's not necessarily, I hope I make a gazillion dollars, but I just love doing what we're doing. So I'm so glad that, there's folks like you still out there on the grind, busking and saying, hey, we're doing this because we love it. And I really admire that in you. I love your sound. Please, whenever you've got some new music coming out, let us know. We'll do everything we can to help you promote it, support it. I follow you on the drum page, so I but please, Tom and I love, we both love rock and we love just helping musicians. So if there's anything we can do for you, please let us know.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate that, guys. Thank you.
Not a problem. Yeah, definitely. We'll keep an eye out. And you guys got something new to promote, we'll definitely come bring you back on. I'd love to have you back on.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I'd love to.